The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
Hey, and next time you're on this damn podcast, wear the proper shirt, okay?
Yeah. All right. Button all the way up.
Our man doesn't even have
I don't
a
do
button
it.
Up.
I can't do it. It's rare for anyone to be able to pull it off, and it's debatable whether Chris does as well.
Oh, yeah. What's up, everybody? It's Chris Sims. It's Chris Sims Unbuttoned. We are here. It's Offensive Lineman Wednesday. Ooh. And I am here with the great Ahmed Fareed, who's wearing his gold pants with his Detroit Tigers hoodie.
4-0 right? Start.
A lot of people are button top buttons this day and age. A lot of people.
No, it's not, I wouldn't just say me. A lot.
But it's a good amount. Like, we will watch certain events, whatever, and yeah. I'll see stars and go, duh, they got their top button like me. It's not that crazy. Okay. I feel like I'm maybe the only guy in sports media that maybe does it
on
a consistent
that.
Basis.
Yeah.
I see Ryan Clark. He messes with it a little every now and then.
That's a good call. I have seen him
right?
do that.
You know, I see Tebow on College Game Day do it every now and then.
Do you feel like you doing it and naming a podcast after it like gave people like the license and freedom to do it themselves?
Well, maybe it gave the encouragement, maybe. Maybe like, hey, that doesn't look that bad on TV. Maybe yeah. I will do that. Right?
I won't be the first.
I just like the clean cut look. Now, I have had people go, hey, I saw you have your look, and I've tried to have my look because I saw you, and I went, oh, that's cool. Every time he comes on, he's got a look. That's what he does.
Yeah.
And I have had people in the industry come up and go, hey, I did try to copy the look thing that you did.
Okay.
You kind of gave me that idea. Now, they don't do the top button, but either way, they have their own style, their own thing, and then they go from there,
I've wanted to get the dress shirt tie for right. when I'm doing some right. Premier League shows or whatever,
right.
rugby, dress shirt tie, and then a vest. No jacket over
oh,
top of
I hear
that.
You
and
there.
Then roll up the sleeves.
Right.
I kind of want to get that
going. I like
going.
That look. I like that look a lot, right? I kind of like the, what is that, a cardigan vest kind of look,
like,
right?
Yeah.
A little bit? Yeah. yeah. I would maybe next year when you, if you guest host a Football Night in America,
yeah.
we'll be twinsies.
They won't let it.
They probably won't.
We're at NBC. They'll let you drop, you know, 13 F-bombs within 15 minutes on the Chris Sims Unbuttoned podcast. But if Ahmed wants to wear a vest with his sleeves rolled up, that's not
yeah,
happening.
Yeah, the sleeves rolled up might be too much. The vest thing you might get away with.
Yeah.
The sleeves rolled up, yeah, that's probably a little too casual for, you know, our favorite baby in the world here at NBC, Football Night in America and Sunday Night
Maybe
Football.
Maybe we'll start with a college basketball show. I'll try it out there and see what happens.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? I feel like the English, if you're on the Premier League or something like that, they'd appreciate that style.
Yeah, agreed.
Right? They're like, he doesn't need to be totally top button, suit, tie, everything.
Yeah.
Right? I think they'd understand that.
We'll get the momentum going here at NBC. And as you know, once the momentum's going, 10 years later, maybe it'll happen.
You know, so, you're funny.
I know. We're good about trying to stay ahead of trends, which is what we're trying to do in this podcast.
Uh-oh.
Because not only do we have a 1 through 5 for tackles, we have a 1 through 5 for interior offensive linemen as well. We did 10. Well, you did 10.
I did a lot more than 10, but we got 10 for today because it's worthy of 10. It's worthy of 10. It's plain and simple. I don't, you know, we've said this about a few other ones, other positions where I've gone, I don't remember this many good ones, right? You know, in 1 year like that. And I feel the same way here. I think we got the quarterbacks, I've said that. The wide receivers, I said that, I believe. And now we hear the O-line. This is not, again, this isn't one where I got done with my top three and I was like, oh, all right, I'll make this guy 4 and this guy 5, even though I don't like him. It was literally like, you know, I was going to text you guys in the group and just go, I don't even know if we rank them. We got 10 awesome ones. I legitimately could see 9 going in the first round, maybe even 10 if it falls right.
That's crazy.
Right. And I don't think that's like a bold statement. I almost think we're guaranteed to see eight in the first round. Like a guarantee. I'd be shocked if there wasn't after looking at the group, the state of the NFL, and the conversations that go around this position.
Can we start with that, too? Yeah. We'll look at back at your rankings here in a second, but I'd like to start with your thought there. We're going to have 10 in the first round because I think the narrative is that, you know, every year you've got some slam dunk tackle or guard or maybe a center that just like he'll be a first rounder because we know he will be a starter in the league for a long time. You see, in last year's draft, you had five in the first round. 2022, it was nine. So, yeah, it's not crazy if we have nine again this year, just a couple years later.
Yeah.
Five the year before that, seven the year before that. But the idea that it's safer here, and have we had busts? Yes, we have had some busts here in the top 10. And so Pete has put together a list since 2016 of offensive linemen drafted in the top 10. Paris Johnson was last year. Darnell Wright was last year. Ike Ekwonu was the year before that. And so, Chris, as you look at that list, this idea that offensive line, specifically in the top 10, is safe. How safe is it really?
Well, I think it is safe. Now, it is a good conversation, O-line, the NFL, the current status. A little bit like we talked about with pass rushers, first off. It's like this is one where, you know, you're not going to have the draft community or some scout or some NFL executive go on and go, I found a guy in the fourth. That's a really – everybody's going to think he's the fourth rounder, but he's really like a top 20 pick, right? That doesn't happen because, you know, size, power, athleticism, all that, it's very easy to see and evaluate that. And, of course, with this position – we know there's some measurables that are necessities for success. You know, within that size, the length thing for offensive tackles, like we talked about with pass rushers having arm length, same thing for the offensive tackles, right? I mean, it's few and far between when you start to get under 32.5-inch arms or really 33-inch arms. Once you start lower that, you're starting to go, there's not too many tackles that are good like that. It's got to be a special group. Now, here's the list that you alluded to, guys in the top 10.
How many were straight out, like, at this point, and it's still early for some of these, as we'll mention throughout this.
Yeah, offensive we're going to talk about some, it. It's development.
A learning curve.
Right.
Who has been like a straight up, that was a bust out of this list?
Let's see. Out of that group right there, I don't think we got one that I would just go, that's a bust.
They've been useful.
Did Jedrick Wills live up to the 10th pick of the draft potential? Maybe not, but it hasn't been a bust. He's clearly a starting left tackle in the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I would say. You know, and a top end, top half of the league one in that, I would even say. So I don't see bust there. Now, we've had ones that have been talked about on the verge of bust, right? But again, that gets into the development thing. Paris Johnson Jr. showed he's got it last year. Darnell Wright also showed where he's got it. Ike Ekwonu from the year before, right? He started off slow, but he's got it. Evan Neal, hey, he'd be one of those guys right now. We're going, ooh, here it is. It's the big year three. Is he going to develop and turn the corner like his counterpart, Andrew Thomas, who everybody was calling a bust after 2 years? And then a year and a half later, everybody was going, what? I think he's the best left tackle in the NFL. Let's pay him like the highest paid left tackle. So, right? So we'll see. Evan Neal's one we're waiting to see. Charles Cross is good, right? Is it ninth pick of the draft good? Probably not right now. Penei Sewell is number one pick of the draft good. Yeah. I mean, it's arguably the best right tackle in football, right? We talked about Andrew Thomas, Jedrick Wills, we talked about Quentin Nelson. I mean, again, you're not a bust if you were considered the best guard in football for multiple years, right?
Yep.
All right. Ronnie Stanley, been some injuries and stuff like that, right? But at one point was the highest paid left tackle in all of football. Mike McGlinchey, ninth pick of the draft, same thing, damn good. Maybe, you know, not ninth pick of the draft good, but damn good. I want him on my team. Sean Payton made him a priority and paid him right away, right? And then Jack Conklin, number eight, eighth pick for the Tennessee Titans, was also considered the best right tackle in football again. So there you go right there. I don't think there's too many busts, right? Now, we might see busts later on in the first round where they start to go, yeah, the play is a little – it needs some polish. He's raw, but he's got some of these measurables, and there's some traits there that we like that we think it's, like, not far off, and I think maybe that's where we've seen some busts. But, again, like the pass rushers – you know, a lot of the times, this is one where there is a formula that's, you know, tried and true, and you know what you're looking for, and you go from there.
I would guess that you're going to say there are two offensive linemen who potentially could go, who you could see as top 10 talents.
Yes, yes.
In this class.
I'm going to say yes, there's two. There's two. And, yeah, You know, I would say that I would feel that in general. And again, we talk about the O-line and development and all that, right? Andrew Thomas, some of those kind of guys, right? It's Charles Cross. He's right in the middle of that right in Seattle right now. You know, we were talking about this before the pod, right? This is one of the biggest adjustment positions from college in the NFL that there is, right? Let's put it this way. One, we were joking about college offenses, right? Most of them run two run plays.
Yeah.
Most of them never have to pass protect very long. They throw a screen, they throw an RPO, it's quick, it's boom, it's blah, blah, blah. Right. And it's never like, oh, wait, you know, Mahomes or Tom Brady are behind me. Oh, wait, he's still got the ball. Hold on. Whoa, he's still got the ball, right? There's never that. So that's an adjustment, let alone the guys you're seeing as pass rushers are not only grown men, the freakiest of grown men,
yep,
who are also like into like, hey, if I put my hand here, he does this. If I put my hand on this pectoral, he'll do that. If I put my hand and place it on the Under Armour. So they're like skilled hand fighters, right? Let alone the defenses are way more complex where you're going, wait, I played in the Big 12. They played the same defense, 74 snaps in a row. What is this? I don't know what this is. There's that adjustment, let alone your own offense has 150 more plays than you did in college football and all these rules. So it is a position of adjustment for sure. And for to think people are just going to come into the league and dominate, you know, right away year one, that's rare, right? Yeah. We don't see that very much. In fact, out of that group right there, as far as just year one domination, I think there might be only one guy that I would sit there and go, he had year one, and that'd be Quentin Nelson. He'd the only guy that I looked at on the list where I went, ooh, year one, he came out and we were like, oh, that's week six. I think he's the best guard in football already, right? I mean, that the rest of them all had a little bit. Even Penei Sewell took like half a year to kind of get going to where at the end of that rookie year, we were all like, oh, well, they got something. He's about to be awesome.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's good. So
that and one other big picture thing of why I think this is an awesome class.
Yeah.
Right? Big picture.
You're going to go into the state of the NFL here.
I think so. Do you want me to go there, or should I not go there yet?
I had a plan in my head.
Oh,
but
go ahead. Sorry.
I thought
you were hustling me along a little bit, and I thought I was about to give a one more thing.
I was going to do that right before we got into our list here.
Okay.
I wasn't a part of the whole pre-show meeting.
This is on me.
This is on me.
No, it's not.
Let's go back to your rankings last year real quick.
You take it.
Because this is what we like to do. We like to look at where you were right, and we like to take a victory lap on that, and then we like to make fun of you when you got something wrong.
Right.
As you mentioned, it's very difficult. We saw those guys at the top last year. Very difficult to tell year one or year two with any of these guys. Does anything stand out with how you evaluated these guys? And I think maybe more importantly, like how you looked at these guys, what you're looking for. I know within the past few years, you're like, all right, I'm tweaking kind of what I look for in these tapes sometimes.
I got to change it a little.
So as you look back at what you saw last year and how you think you did, what's changed about scouting this position?
Yeah, I like what I did last year. I know I was a little different in having Paris Johnson at two, right?
Three.
Right? All right, three, excuse me, in tier two, but number three. First off, all three, the top three, Darnell Wright, Broderick Jones, Paris Johnson, all looked awesome.
Yeah.
All looked like they belong. They're good. Don't worry about it. Anton Harrison looks like he belongs, but he's a guy that, again, I think is what we just talked about. Needs a little development. We'll see where it goes, but has all the traits to be a big-time tackle in the NFL. The other three, you know, damn good,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And I think where I evaluated and where I was maybe a little lower on Paris Johnson than the rest, because I favor the huge human being. I've kind of gotten into that a little bit. I have. I'm not so much always into this sexy, oh, look at his feet. They're so good, right? You know, I feel like I've been burned a few times by that type of guy. Oh, he's so athletic. Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. Well, gosh. The first time Khalil Mack came off the edge, yeah, he was really athletic. But Khalil Mack put him in the first row of the stadium because he has no anchor, right? So that's where I had to change my thought. And I feel like that's where we saw busts over the last decade to 12 to 15 years. It's going to be those type of linemen more times than not where we're like, oh, he's so awesome athletic. Well, yeah, okay, he's awesome athletic, but he can't handle any of the power, gritty stuff that you have to worry about, right? And a guy like T.J. Watt or Micah Parsons, they haven't seen speed to power like that in college football yet. And that's where, hey, they might be able to stay with them in the quick stuff, those quicker, quick-fit athletic guys. But then as soon as one of those guys puts their foot in the ground and goes, here comes the power rush, it's like, see you later, and they sack the quarterback themselves because they're flying back that way. So that's where I've adjusted my thought. That's maybe where I was a little wrong on Paris Johnson, because his length and everything too, his anchor's better than I gave it credit for. His length and his arms, he's so good at that. He knows how to stop the charge too, right? But I prefer the Penei Sewells of the world. The maybe not the most athletic, like freaky athlete, but it's still really good. But yet he can handle all types, size, and shapes of defensive ends. Oh, this guy's the, ooh, this is the 290-pound DeMarcus Lawrence, right, coming off the edge. I can handle that, right? I got the power. Ooh, it's Micah Parsons. Yeah, he's a little fast for me, but not so fast that I can stay in there. And then yet I'm so big and strong, even when he kind of gets the edge of me, like we talked about the other day, I hit a hand on him, and then he owes up five more yards. And it's like, I wasn't fast enough, but I'm so damn strong, he still couldn't get around me, right? So I prefer that. I prefer the Penei Sewell. I prefer the Jordan Mailata or the Lane Johnson or the Orlando Brown or Ronnie Stanley when he came out. I like that giant human being. Now, again, there's a line. That's why I like Darnell Wright last year. I went Darnell Wright. He might have a little adjustment to some of the speed guys, but nobody's going to overpower him. And that's where I got into that, let alone those guys, to me, more times than not, the Penei Sewells, the Lane Johnsons, they're usually really good road grading blockers, too. It's not just about pass protection. So that's how I kind of look at it. And, and the big picture thing, we know, hey, there's not enough of them to go around.
Yeah.
There's a good class. And I think you add on that with the fact of, we talk about there's so many good D linemen. There's not a lot of well-coached offensive linemen. There's not a lot of people on earth right now that can stand in there and block the Danielle Hunters and those type of people there are out there, right, that are just freaks of nature coming off the edge. And therefore, you need to find a freak of nature on your own edge to stop that charge. And I think that's where we're seeing the value of this position really increase in the recent NFL. Quarterbacks' contracts, how important it is to keep the quarterback healthy, added to all the good pass rushers, right? And we're seeing the top teams in football, your Detroit Lions, what do they got? The number one thing we talk about, big, powerful offensive line, right? And I think it's a necessity we all overlook at
times.
Which
is why you think that maybe 9 or 10 teams will take an offensive lineman in the first round here. I think you got to give yourself credit on Blake Freeland there. You didn't mention him.
Sorry.
He was a fourth-round pick by the Indianapolis Colts.
Right.
Played in all 16 games.
Yes,
ended up starting 9 games for them.
He's got something there, you know. He was the rare... Oh, no, he's a little skinnier than, like, he's a good athlete.
6'7", 302.
Right. He was, like, a little bit, that's rare for me to like that guy all the way. But there was enough there I was like, damn, I think he could maybe play guard if he had to or whatever. But he's long enough a tackle, and like a Paris Johnson, where that length made up for maybe the lack of a few extra pounds in his ass, right, and strength in that way. That's the things you have to decipher and kind of cut through in this whole process.
Have we looked at your interior offensive line rankings? Just real quick before we get into our 10 players here, because we want to keep you accountable.
Yeah,
we want to make
please
sure.
Do.
Peter Skoronski was the consensus number one guy in this group. And then it wasn't like there were a ton of
I feel like
names,
this is pretty strong here.
I agree.
Right.
You heard a lot of good, I think, about Osiris Torrance.
Osiris Torrance was, up in, I'm always getting mixed. He was in Buffalo, right? Mm-hmm. He did a really good job. Matthew Bergeron started at guard for the Atlanta Falcons. We know Skoronski's good. John Michael Schmitz took over the center position for the New York Giants, right? Him and Joe Tippmann were the two centers last year. I liked him better than Tippmann. Tippmann also started for the Jets, too. And then we had, our man Cody Mock.
Cody Mark?
Mark? Oh, no, I didn't study that guy as we had so much fun with. And of course, he started on the offensive line
all
down there
17
in Tampa,
games.
Too. Right. And then I think our sixth guy was maybe Steve Avila, this TCU guy we talked about, and he ended up starting for the Rams for
whole
year.
You nailed this, basically.
I feel like this
dominant.
Is one position I'm not a guru in. I know there's things I don't know about the position. In fact, in a lot of ways, I might tell you maybe the worst position of knowledge, right? I feel like I've been a lot around other positional coaches who have always taught me little nuances about these things and all that, right? O-line, I feel like that's one where, yeah, I've had to ask people over the last few years. I've had to self-scout a little bit and look at it and go, wait, well, what am I missing here? What am I doing here, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's probably the position I've made the biggest adjustment over, you know, the last 6 or 7 years in.
As a novice film watcher guy,
yeah,
I can say that this is a position where you really need to use a little bit of a cheat sheet, I would imagine, right? It's just like, all right, body size, big school, didn't look bad when he was at that big school. All right, that puts you in a bucket now where we can look at you a little closer.
Right.
Because it's just like,
right,
there's so many of these guys.
Exactly.
Too.
Right. Body size, that arm length we talk about,
yep,
right, of those guys, you put them in the bucket. Now it's like, wait, which ones can play tackle? Which ones can play guard? Why does that make sense there? And then you start to decipher which ones has the power and makes sense to be a guard in the run game. Ooh, which one has no problems with anybody in pass pro? And that's, you know, again, what separated me with this whole list here. And, you know, I think it's really great. Interesting group altogether.
And there were a couple players that separated themselves from all the rest of the linemen, interior or tackle. So we'll start tier one, your offensive tackle, then we'll get to your 1 through 5 of your interior linemen. We will do that before your Bo Nix interview so we don't make Bo Nix wait.
Yeah, we don't want to do that
here. So tier number one, you got two players in this tier for tackle. Let's just get right into it. Chris, you ready?
Yeah.
Your number one offensive tackle in the draft class of 2024 is
J.C. Latham, Alabama. All right. I mean, man, do I love me some J.C. Latham, right? Let me just say this right off the bat. Again, he fits the guys that I talked about, right? He's Penei Sewell-ish. He's Tristan Wirfs-ish, right? Big, perfect body to me as far as a right tackle, left tackle is concerned. You know, again, he played right tackle at Alabama. I don't think he's going to have any problem playing left tackle either with the kind of athlete he is. You know, one, you talk about the traits, right? Physical traits, sure, got them all. The as far as like movement, power, all that. But the traits we talk about that separates the really good tackles from the, ooh, the fringe tackle to the guard, right? There's two things to me that make sense there. The arm length is insane, right? At 35 1/8, right? To be 6'6", 342. So arm length insane, anchor insane, and then foot speed and all of that, right? Is real good. It's not perfect, right? So I'm going to say, too, hey, you know, I got Joe Alt number two. Joe Alt's awesome. He's, if you look at Joe Alt's film, he's the safer, more consistent pick, right? But not so much to me in this one where I go, wait, this guy isn't that raw to where I'm like, oh, man, I'm worried he's got to fix this, this, and this, right? It's the rawness was, yes, it is there, but the high-end talent and what he does and the physical ability, to me, makes up enough to where I'm going, I'm fine with putting him in front of Joe Alt. It's not that raw to where I go, oh, no. Right? So that's where I feel good about. First off, look at his body. You know I like legs and butt, and it's incredible. He moves really well. Here's the thing I would say to people, too. You know, again, a little raw. Watch the start of the season last year. You're not going to be – I told you this before the thing because I almost texted you last night. You watch the start of the year – you watch Texas, the old Miss game. You're going to see a few missed blocks, some bad angles in the run game, right? You know, but I'm big into, like, let's watch the start of the year. Now let me put on some games at the end of the year and see what this guy looks like, right? So you watch some of that. You see all the physical traits and the wowness. You see all that. But there was some, like, oh, well, that was a horrible angle he took to the linebacker in the second level. Or why did he set up like that trying to protect there? And, you know, he gave himself no chance. It was never physical questions. You were never like, oh, no, he can't do this or can't do that. You were just like, man, he's just got to get a little better in these areas. We got to the end of the year, right? When I watched Auburn, Georgia, and Michigan, forget about it. That's what sold me. I went, whoa, the guy got better at all the things that I was a little worried about. You know, he played under control, going to the second level. All of a sudden, you go, nobody goes by him now, right? I'd watch pass protection. I go, oh, he's worked on his bucket step and his footwork there. And, I mean, Michigan guys couldn't get within 10 feet of the quarterback that day, nor could the Georgia guys or the Auburn guys. And, again, we know those are top-tier talent college football defenses, right?
Sure.
So that's where I loved it. And so the length, you know – The power as far as the anchor, right? Because that's the other thing I saw. Once he started to get a little bit better feel for the game, he was immovable. His anchor was the best, right? His anchor was not good some games when you saw, okay, yeah, he's playing basketball like he's playing tackle, and he gets a little like, oh, the guy faked me this way, and I'm leaning, and now he hit me in the chest, and I lost it. But I, to me, was like, oh, man, this guy's got all the ability to do all that stuff and be amazing at it. As you saw, he started to get better at it. He was unstoppable. And then here's the other aspect, too. His run blocking is off the charts good. I mean, out of the tackles, okay, nobody run blocks like this guy. One, he can move you on contact. Two, he's the, you know, even if he doesn't move you on contact, he then goes, wait, you're not moving. I'm going to move you. And he starts to move you down the football field, right? So not only is the pass protection, to me, elite superstar type potential and ability, the run blocking is phenomenal as well.
Finishes off double teams emphatically.
Right? He just puts that shoulder in there and guys go flying or they fall to the ground, right?
He just turned 21 years old in February. That's a crazy thing. 6'6". 342. He's got the pedigree too. He was the number one lineman in high school coming out when he went to Alabama, second team All American, first team All SEC last season. So still young, still learning, still growing into that body, if that's even possible. NFL.com says a bulldozer in human form, elite drive blocking talent. PFF, same type thing, says a dream offensive tackle, physically moves like a player who is 40 pounds lighter. And so they echo your sentiments about a guy that has been mocked like in the 20s. But you hear the scouting reports and that talent. I will say the one thing as a novice film watcher guy.
Yeah, go ahead.
The one thing that I saw, two things.
Right.
He didn't face the elite edge rushers. You mentioned those teams,
sure.
Right? But it was like, for whatever reason, Michigan, Georgia, Auburn didn't have any like elite dudes this year.
Right.
So you would have liked to have seen a little bit of that.
Sure.
Number two, it's like you hear the cliche, oh, you could call holding all the time, right? And you watch these films, you're like, yeah, not all the time, but you could probably call a fair number of times.
Yeah.
I feel like he like held the most. I don't know. It seemed like, and he's got the big hands, and like maybe
I think
it was
just a little too egregious with it.
Get him locked in.
Keep him locked. Keep him inside a little bit. That's part of the rawness.
He had 18 penalties last year, Pete. Last two years.
Yeah.
Okay.
I also think he gets to a spot where on some of these too, where you see where he's got the guy locked up. The guy's stuck, right? His arms are so like it's not holding yet.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Milrow scrambles and he holds him. So, cause he's like, wait, where are you going? He holds him by accident, you know, but again, it's stuff where, like I said, I just go that it's being picky and sure. I just don't have any doubt that he can clean that stuff up, let alone just maybe be a little less. Yeah. Like we talk about, he manhandles sometimes people on the shoulders. It's not like 2 years ago, early this year, there might have been a few holdings where I go, that's legit holding. Like, he was beat, and he had to hold the guy or do something to get the advantage, mm-hmm. right? There was a few holdings that I saw, and I go, that's not holding. That's a fucking pitiful call by the referee. That's called domination. That's what that's called, and you don't know what you're looking at. So
and I can
some
see,
of that, too.
And I can see the inverse of that, too. It's where he was holding in times where he didn't need to hold,
he
right?
Didn't
just
need
take
to.
It out. You're just like, you've got him beat.
He's exactly right.
And just push him down. Use your strength there.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The
Paris Olympics this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
We've got Carmageddon 4 with a question for you.
Yeah.
Will the two first-round tackles coming out of Alabama, Alex Leatherwood and Evan Neal, give you pause on J.C. Latham?
No. I don't like to do that. One, these are different humans, different things there, right? Alex Leatherwood was a first-round pick, I think, only on the Raiders' board, right?
Yeah.
Remember, let's just remember that. Nobody had him. The Raiders that year picked two guys that were like, everyone was like, what? They're not in the top 45 of our list here. How the hell did you pick them? So, you know, that's a little different. Evan Neal, we talked about already. Let's see where that goes. We know this is a big year, right? But
Wills, Jonah Williams, DJ Fluker, or other first-round picks in the last 10 drafts.
Yeah, and you know, again, Jedrick Wills has been good. Jonah Williams, probably better guard than tackle, in my opinion, but has had to play tackle for a lot of his career there. And, yeah, DJ Fluker would be the guy where I'd go, he actually is a hair too slow with the feet and all that. Big, like, you like the look and all that, but it was too a little too plodding and all of that. But, again, no, I'm not going to, you know, look at it and go, this is what we would have done last year with C.J. Stroud. How can I take a quarterback from Ohio State? None of them ever work out. Then Ohio State quarterbacks, you can't touch them. That has nothing to do with that individual person. So you can't make an overarching theme or, you know, judgment that way.
The only overarching theme we make on this podcast is Ohio State wide receivers. We just don't like them. We just will never like them, no matter how good they are. We just do not like them. That's the one thing we hold against them. So your number one tackle J.C. Latham from Alabama. He's a franchise cornerstone. You have one more.
I mean, Penei Sewell and Tristan Wirfs is who I looked at, right, to go, that's who this guy reminds me of. He's damn special, and I expect, damn special stuff for him once he gets on the field in the NFL.
And this next guy, dang special
Well.
Just turned 21 years old in February as well. That's crazy how
young
these guys are.
Yeah.
His father, John, was a 21st overall pick in the 84 draft by the Chiefs. Two-time Pro Bowler, Chiefs Hall of Famer, so he's got the pedigree. You gave it away a little bit ago. Your number two tackle in this draft class is
Big Joe Alt from Notre Dame. Yes. Joe Alt's the safest pick. He's the most consistent film, the safest pick out of all the linemen in the draft, right? So if you're a team that's going, wait, we need a tackle and we can't miss and we need, like you said, to start before the thing, he's our starting tackle for the next 10 years, right?
Yeah.
You're guaranteed of that. The floor is incredibly high. The ceiling is not as high as J.C. Latham, right, that we just talked about. No, it's not that, right? This is one where I go, hey, Joe Walt, I mean – it can be boring watching film of him. It's so consistently good. You're just like, oh, perfect technique, perfect running block, right? It doesn't always, like, domination, right? That's one thing I'll say where
– but he's never physically dominated either, I think, is the thing.
I'm big into that, right? And I write that about a bunch of guys here, right? And you could say that about Latham too. That's big into me. When you what's your loss look like?
He's
right?
76 in these
What's your loss look like, right? And like these are guys where their losses are like stalemate wrestling matches at the line of scrimmage, right? They don't lose. They really don't. And I look at Alt and just go, he's got really good feet. He's got the proper length, right? He's coached up pro ready, being from Notre Dame. He's technically sound in all areas. All right, so that's where you really love Joe Alt. I look at him in a lot of ways, and here's another thing that maybe why I made him too. Like I said, I don't know if I feel like his ceiling is so much is not in the same capacity as Latham. I look at him and go, I think he's Taylor Decker, your left tackle in Detroit. Again, starting tackle for 10 years, right? All pro? No, not that. A Pro Bowl here or there? Sure. Mike McGlinchey? I think it's something like that type of guy. But I don't think I see the ceiling as much higher than that right there, right? And again, that's still really damn good. I don't want to offend anybody by that. But I'm just trying to give a little nuance onto why I like Latham a little bit better than where Joe Walt is.
So I mentioned his father, John. We have a couple pictures to take you back here if you're watching on YouTube or Peacock as well. There is, wow, look at John. Look at the big shoulder pads there. That's an intimidating force.
I remember him. I mean, that's incredible. He's wearing the neck roll, too.
Turn around, go the other way. And there's John, and there's little Joe.
Now,
how about that?
Now, what I will say to you too, right? You know, not as strong as Latham, like I said, you know, but the game is cleaner, like we talked about, really in all areas. Never takes a wrong angle, right? You know, I'll say I don't think he physically mauls people, maybe like some of the other guys we are going to talk about here later today. But he still pushes a lot of people back. Don't get me wrong there. I don't want it to seem like we're talking about a guy that just kind of does his assignment. It's more than that. I'm just saying it's not like, oh, my gosh, he collapsed the whole line, right?
He's more like a wall.
He's more like a wall. He gets in a position and you're like, he's done. He's cut it off and that D tackle screwed and he can't make the play and he's there. Exactly right. That's what I mean. It's not always like what I would see with J.C. Latham would hit that guy and go, whoa, I'm going to collapse you and your buddy next to you. Yeah. And that whole side's guy, right? It's a little different that way. But, you know, great eyes, anticipates, right? That's, again, that's part of this, like, hey, he sees stunts coming. He comes off the right way, does all that stuff, knows how to use his hands, right? I'm going to be interested in another reason I like Latham better, right, is I don't think Alt's anchor is as good as Latham when it's on its P's and Q's, and what I saw, like I said, the last three or four games of the year from Latham.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's Latham.
Latham.
Too,
I keep
way.
Saying
it's
that. Right. Latham.
He's our number
me.
One guy. We need to embrace his proper pronunciation.
I see too many pronunciations and I then mess it up myself.
We're nervous because of the names that we have coming up.
Latham, though, that's like Joe Wall, when he's got to play that power rusher, right? There's a part of me that goes, I'm going to be interested to see how well he is or how good he is in that department. But, you know, damn good football player. We know that. Definite.
Yep.
Like, you know, again, top 10, top 12 pick for sure.
I mean, I watched him. I was like, there's nothing wrong with this guy. No. I was like, he's like the perfect offensive lineman. I watched his Ohio State game, and so he did go against some of the top pass rushers.
Well, so JT, who, though? Who was
JT
the top?
Tuimoloau.
Okay.
So he didn't come out this year, but he's projected to be, you know, top
and,
three.
Did you look at the projections of the SEC guys for next year?
I did. I actually looked ahead because I was like, maybe one of these guys was elite, but they weren't necessarily. but he handled Tuimoloau, and you'll watch later on, and I think we got some other guy, Penn State, had a little trouble with him. And a lot of teams had a trouble with him. And he handled him. And it was Tyleek Williams who came back to second team All-Big Ten defensive tackles. And he was just passing him off. I mean, he just, like, unflappable is what I would say. It was just, like, he's not dominated.
His body never gets in a bad position.
We have his pro day
stuff.
He's
always ready to
go. So we can check out his hindquarters.
He's got the tallest ass I've ever seen in my life in a 3-point stance. I mean, when you
a high
like,
butt, a high butt. That's what
when you
want.
See the Notre Dame offensive line across the board, you start to go, I don't know, is that a horse's ass at left tackle or is that a man? Like, I mean, and I'm saying that in the most endearing way possible.
I lied here. We do not have the pro day, but do we have Connor's discussion with him? Okay, so Connor Rogers got to talk to him at the combine, and here was part of their conversation.
We know you're a big guy. You could drive block off the line of scrimmage in the run game. But in the zone game, the way you move and hit your strike zone in the zone game is really impressive at that size. Not a lot of guys are in control like that. What has gone into mastering the zone running game for you?
Yeah, I think it kind of starts for me at that tight end idea just because it kept my feet, you know, light and, you know, athletic and being able to move at my size I am now. And then for me, I think it's just really understanding, you know, where the ball carrier is going to be, what's his landmark, and, like, where can't I get beat? You know, okay, the ball's going right. You know, I'm on a backside zone block. I can't get beat to my inside because that's where the ball's going. So I think really understanding, you know, where the ball's trying to hit. And then when I make contact, you know, waiting for them to peek which way they're going to go, and that's when you turn it on.
Tight end in high school.
You see that.
He was talking about stuff that I didn't really know what he was talking about.
Well, he's reach blocks, cutoff blocks, right? Things like that where it's like, wait, you know, we're running over here. You're on my outside edge of my shoulder, and we're running over there. Set hut. I got to somehow get on your outside edge of your shoulder now so you don't get outside of me to get the run that we're going that way, right? Mm-hmm. He does all that stuff phenomenal. Or like he was explaining, it's a run to the right. He's on the left side, and he's got to cut off that backside defense end and not let him pursue and stop the run that way. He's great at that stuff. That's where, I mean, the athletic ability for a guy that's 6'9", 321, that's where it's special. So, and the pad level, that's where the other thing you look at. With these tall guys, a lot of times you just go, they're too tall. Somebody's going to get in their chest, and they're going to go on a roller coaster ride, right? He doesn't have that issue there. So it's really damn good. And like I said, I'll say it again, you know, he is the safer pick then lay them. And I understand why the draft community has him above that. And I'm sure there's going to be a team or two, or there's a bunch of teams that go, no, Joe Walt's the number one, right? But, you know, as I told you before, because I was texting around a little bit about this. And
am I crazy?
Am I crazy? Right. And people were like, no, you're not crazy to have Latham, you know, that high.
You're out there, but you're not crazy. Yeah. You're not insane. Right. So is he really 6'9", 321? We got to do the Connor test. I don't know if Connor stood up next to him.
Oh, did they go back to back?
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Okay.
That looks like it.
I think that checks out.
That checked out? 6'9", 321.
It looks like it's confirmed.
He's more than a foot taller than Connor.
It is now confirmed. And I would say this. We got a question here from Nicholas Madeir 3. Is Joe Alt worthy as the Chargers' number 5 pick playing right tackle? How much of a difference is the transition from left tackle to right tackle? Really, so that gets into something maybe a little more than I was anticipating there. But 5th overall pick, we've heard the Tennessee Titans almost guaranteed to take
seven.
A lineman at 7.
Right.
And you got Bill Callahan over there, one of the best offensive line coaches in NFL history.
Yeah.
You do wonder, it's like you got Joe Alt, the polished guy, but you got Bill Callahan there who could take a guy like J.C. Latham, who's a little more raw but maybe has more potential, and you could make a play for JC and the guy that has more moldable clay, perhaps.
I don't think that's crazy as I'm saying here. I don't. I mean, I think these two guys are special. I really do. And Alt, you know, at 5 to the Chargers or whatever. I mean, yeah, I could see Harbaugh and company doing that. You know, GMs from the Baltimore Ravens. It's Jim Harbaugh. We know he wants to run the ball 33 straight times in a big game in college football. Like, yes, it's where it starts for him. O-line, D-line, that's what he had in San Francisco when they were going to the Super Bowl. It was arguably the best O-line and D-line in all of football. So, I wouldn't be shocked to see them make that type of move and solidify the O-line in front of Justin Herbert and then whoever they sign at running back or draft a running back in the mid-rounds.
Both those guys, in your mind, are worthy of a top 10 pick. Now we go into tier 2. You got 3 offensive tackles in this tier. You like these guys. You think they're all first-round picks.
100%.
Your number 3 tackle in the 2024 draft class is?
Amarius Mims from Georgia. I mean, you could make a case that Amarius Mims is up there for the best pass-protecting tackle in this draft, right? I mean, again, 6'8", 340, right? Yeah. I mean, it's Joe Alt. It's really almost like a combination of Alt and Latham.
Yeah.
Damn it, Latham, together in a little bit of a body
I
way,
can see
right?
That. Yeah.
You know, it's a little thicker than Alt, but it's not as thick as Latham, right? Had a little, you know, injury. Right? It's not perfect, again, as far as, like, technique and all that. He could play too high in the running game, that's for sure. But, again, I think it's one of those where you look at it and you look at him as through the test of time, it just continues to get better to where you look again at the end of the year and stuff last year and you go, no one has a fucking chance of getting around the edge of this wall here, this human wall at right tackle, right? And that's where I just found him to be, you know, incredible. Now, he's got to learn to play with lower pads. He's got to learn to use his legs a little bit more and keep them going on contact and all that stuff. But when you talk about pass pro, that was one of the last things I wrote pass pro very good. Like, he is pass pro ready for the NFL right now. Like, you don't have to worry. He's going to be able to block the best in the game in that department. It's the run game stuff and technique stuff that he's going to need, you know, a little polish with. But that's really the only thing.
So, 21 years old, turns 22 in October, just 8 starts in his college career. In the past 2 seasons, had some injuries, and I was watching the tape of him and those injuries. I'm like, uh-oh, is this injury prone? Because I even think at the combine, he maybe had to
pulled up a little bit, right? Or
something happened at the combine. I was like, uh-oh, is this an injury-prone guy? I looked at both of the injuries. The first one, he got stepped on by his own lineman on his ankle, and that sucked.
Yep.
And then in the South Carolina game, a teammate pancaked another player onto his knee.
Right. Yep. It was like a high ankle sprain, knee sprain kind of look. I watched that game. Right.
Both fluky things that just,
it's not like you're like, oh, right, exactly right. It's not like you're like, oh, he's got weak knees when he plants, his knee gives out. We're worried about that, right? It's not that. It's part of what happens there. And I, you know, that's to me, I wonder, right? I know I'm probably going to be a little higher on him because of like what we're talking about, like because he hasn't played a lot, there was the injuries, all of that. You know, I wouldn't be shocked to see him maybe go a little lower than I expect, right?
Yeah.
Like I wrote 15 to 25. right? I don't, is the NFL, because of the things you brought up, make him go 20 to 32, right?
Yep.
It wouldn't to me, because, again, I look at it and just go, this is a no-brainer. I mean, again, I think this is a guy that would, I would say, maybe has a higher ceiling than even Joe Walt, right? I mean,
that's the intriguing part. It's
exactly.
Like the eight starts in college, you might look at it and be like, oh, what happened there? But that's also what people look at and be like, wow, yeah. After just eight starts,
you look like that, you're doing that. Right. That is really, really impressive. You know, is like I talked about, even the consistency and technique in pass pro, I thought was really good. You know, uses punches well, use the punch well, you know, stay squares to the line of scrimmage, right, a little bit with the bucket step. That's very important because, again, a lot of these guys, they get in these two-way go situations where they open themselves up and guys get them leaning and they're screwed. He never gets like that. So he never has to lean or whatever. He's always in good position, right? I think the big thing to do with him is just lowering the pads, right, keeping the feet going in the run game and all of that. He relies on his upper body strength too much in that department. But, like, side-to-side movement and all of that, it's the ability to mirror. It's extremely impressive for the size of the human being and what he does. And then, again, he's one of those guys, like even Latham, where you see plays where you go, oh, it looks like the guy's about to get around him, and he's got such length that he hits the guy on the shoulder or the back or whatever, and they go 6 yards upfield, and they don't even come close to the quarterback. And, you know, that's something that is used a lot in the NFL games that we don't, you know, recognize all the time.
So the novice film watcher said the best plays in the run game, I was looking at those. I go, he plays a little high, but he's such a giant human that if he gets you moving one way,
you're done
it's
that.
Over.
Right.
And there are so few options in pass protection for defensive linemen to beat him, right? Like you just mentioned, they don't have as many options because of his length and his agility and speed still.
Yes, exactly.
To make up for any mistakes. Connor also talked to Amarius at the Combine. We'll get this side-by-side. You could just do the side-by-side right out of the soundbite, guys, just to make sure that the size and weight stacks up and checks out. Here's what Connor said to Amarius at the Combine.
I'm from a small town, Cochran, Georgia, where it's not much there, 2,000 people. And I'm kind of country. I don't know if you can hear from my voice.
Okay.
But I like to hog hunt when I go home. So literally, as soon as I get home Monday, that night I'm going hog hunting.
You go on foot? Do you ride a quad out there?
Most of the time it's a quad, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes we just get in the big trucks, you know, we just go. And we have this little scanner, like thermal scanner going across the field. You know, we see something, we pull over, we go get it.
I mean, I think if I was running an NFL team, that might be my requirement that all
he looks,
offensive
this is even
linemen
funnier picture right here. Hunters.
I mean, like that, like Connor, no offense to Connor, he looks like a small human being.
Very, well, I mean, we all going to look being small, no doubt about it. And this guy, like, you know, you look at his body even compared to Joe Walt, you can see there's a thigh that's even a different size compared to Joe Walt.
Yeah.
And to be, again, keep that picture up one more time, or that one right there. Either one is good.
Just go back and forth.
To be 6'8", 340, and to be put together like that, again, it's not sloppy, right?
Right.
I mean, it's like he's got a body of a guy that you go, oh, yeah, what is he? Is he a defense end that's 6'4", 278?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, shit, he's 6'8", 340? Oh, my gosh. And he has the longest arms in the draft? Right? There's nothing to question about the guy athletically, right? Just like the other guys we talked about already. He can do it all. To me, it's just nuance fixing, maybe a little tightness in the hips like we talked about with getting low there and all that. But you can see the abilities there. That's the big thing, right? Getting to the second level, running, moving, side-to-side shuffle with the feet, strength, power, all there. Get coached up and make the adjustment. But, yeah, damn, I like me some Amarius Mims.
Pete has one question for you, and we can look at his heptagon for this. I mean, his percentiles are off the chart. I mean, you can't go off the charts technically because it's you're just not mathematically possible. But height, 91st percentile, weight, 94th, wingspan, 97th, arm length, 95th, hand size, 97th. You got broad jump, 85th, but then you got the vertical jump at 19th. Does vertical jump matter at all for an offensive lineman?
Not really, no. No, I mean, you know, it's like the vertical jump and the broad jump are just a little bit about the explosion through the hips, the ability to do that.
Getting out of your three-point stance,
maybe? A little bit. There's things that translate there. I honestly think O-line coaches will look at it and go, ooh, the broad jump's more important to them because of that ability, again, to roll the hips through, right, to extend to get your feet out there for the broad jump. So much is needed of that when you block, right? You block somebody, and you don't want to still be crouched over. Like in a, at some point, you want to extend the body, right, and roll those hips through. So now you're almost like a straight plank as you're pushing, and you're getting all use of your body leverage, right? That's something you look at. You know how, like, they do that O-line drill at the combine where they're on their knees and they have to block that way, yeah, right, and do that. That's what they're checking. Wait, how much power does he have through the hips when it just goes, huh, can he snap through and move people that way? That's, you know, some of the things you can glean from that.
It would be a surprise,
right,
if he was the first tackle off the board. But I'm telling you right now, like,
he's your favorite. I can tell that. He's your favorite.
I just liked him a lot.
I liked
all.
You're allowed to have a man crush on somebody other than the one or two guy.
I
kind of
like Mims. Yeah. I'm like, dude, that guy.
Right.
It's just like, there's not, it's just, I'm blushing. I'm blushing.
You
now.
Are. Well, he's got some things about him where you go, you know, it's Trent Brown on his best years, right? It's Orlando Brown, but even a better athlete than that in his best years. Or, yeah, you know, Malata that we see in Philadelphia, who I think is an all-pro-ish left tackle. It's that guy, but you go, damn, his feet are actually better than Malata's, right? So there's, you look at it and you go, the potential, again, like him and Latham, I just go, like, would I be shocked in, like, 4 years from now where, like, they're the all-pro tackles, and it's the start of them being that for like 4 years in a row? Sure. I would not be surprised by that.
Or maybe we're wrong and I'm wrong and that vertical jump really was a big deal. Man, he couldn't jump. Staying in tier two, we go to number four, your number four tackle. And again, to remind you, this tier is promising but needs some polish.
Yeah, that's all
needs
it
to
is.
Work on his game, but still a first-round talent. Your number four tackle is?
Tyler Guyton, Oklahoma. I think a lot of the same things we just talked about with Amarius Mims, it's the same type of stuff here. Maybe a little bit I thought I heard somebody in my ear.
Wait,
there.
Pete says.
Oh, wait, sorry. So we changed it. Yes, we did. We did.
Oh, no. I was like, all right, I guess I'm wrong here.
We did. Okay. I was wrong. Okay. I was wrong. That's my
Forget
bad.
Forget that we said that name. That name has no
and
relevance
we can
to this list.
It.
Yeah. We'll never
I
talk about
Pete
that player
say
again.
Wait in my ear. So, yes, here we go.
I figured I just missed the pre-show meeting again. So
no,
I was
no,
like,
no,
oh.
No. I blanked out of myself here, too. And because I have him so close and everything like that, I turned the page and his name was here anyways.
Okay.
Guyton's. Okay, so we let you know. Guyton's
okay.
Number five.
Okay, hold on. So ready? Right. Let's reset.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah. Reset.
3, 2, 1. Your number four tackle in the 2024 draft class is not Tyler Guyton. It is.
Do you want to try to say his name all the way out?
Olu Fashanu.
Olu
Fashanu. The first name.
Right.
Olu
the
Fashanu.
Whole first name is a lot.
Yeah, which is, yeah.
Olumuyiwu
Fashanu.
Right.
Who we called all year for Big Ten coverage, Fashanu, but everyone did. But just so we set
he
the record straight,
it, right?
We are not messing this up. He
no.
said this. It's Fashanu. I know
Fashanu.
We're hard to trust at this point, but Fashanu, your number four tackle.
I am the worst in the business as far as that's concerned.
Yeah.
Right. Now, yeah. Again, you saw Guyton and Fashanu. I had very close, right? I'm not as high on Fashanu maybe as the rest of the draft community.
I think
okay?
he was consensus like
number
one
two
or two,
right?
Yeah.
Right. You know, I feel like I see him now as number two most of the time at
but
tackle.
But he has dropped off a bit. I feel like not a great – I think the combine, there were some things and concerns.
I thought athletically his footwork is the worst of like his pure ability with his feet, foot quickness and all that. Now – he's got some really intriguing things about his pass protection, and he's actually very good at it in a lot of ways. I think that's why the draft community, and again, I think in some circles of the NFL, they're going to look at it and go, wait, I know he can pass protect. He's a safe pick. Let's just do that, right? Right. But I felt like some of the pass protection stuff, I go, I don't know if that's realistic, going to really be able to happen in the NFL when he gets there. Okay. And I'll explain that in a second. One, we know it's the, really long arms. He's not as big as the other guys we've talked about. You know, this is 6'6", 312, right? You know, it's 30-something pounds lighter than Latham, 28 pounds lighter than Mims, you know, a few pounds, 10 or 12 pounds lighter than Alt. Okay, the his ability to get on pass rushers and get his arms on you and close the gap to where they can't go speed to power is phenomenal, right? He's great at that. And then once he gets you, he's got a great wide base and you can't get off of it, right? That's where it's impressive. Now, yes, I think the feet are slow a little bit, even in pass pro. I thought they're the slowest out of the guys we've talked about so far. I thought in the run game, he is the least impressive in the run game as well. He doesn't really move anybody in the run game. He kind of just leans on people, and that's really it. There's never domination in the run game, okay? He's a little slow and lumbering in that department. I thought he was a little slow and lumbering altogether, right? But he's a little more advanced in the technique as far as some of the other guys in pass pro, right? And I think that's going to make people feel warm and cozy, and I think people see that. But it's not great explosion off the ball, right? There's no domination in the run game at all, right? And then here's where, again, I see the plays people are talking about where they go, oh, man, you know, look at him. He's perfect. He's all over this guy. They can't move and all that, right? And, you know, he's got a decent little bucket step, keeps his feet, though, like we talked about, in a good position all the time. But I don't think his anchor's as good as the guys we talked about, and you got to look through it, right? Because you're not going to see a lot of plays where guys actually get ahead of steam like the NFL and get to go speed to power. That's the first thing I would say, right? He played some guys, and they were, I think, a little lucky in who they played this year and some schemes, too, where I'd go, you know, they never really lined up right wide. So he could take a step off the line of scrimmage and get his hands on them, and they never go. And I go, well, but that's not going to happen. Like, T.J. Watt's not going to line up there. That's he can't do that, right? Michael Parsons isn't going to go, hey, let me line up right to you so you can get your big damn long arms and hands on me and not let me go anywhere. They're going to go, let me get really wide and make you move and let me gain some speed and momentum. And when you find a few of those plays, I do not think his anchor is of the caliber of the other guys we talked about. So that's why I wasn't as in love with him. I can see why, you know, the scouting world is in love with him. And I could probably see, yeah, coaches in the NFL go, ooh, I think he might be a little bit more safer because of what I see in the pass pro thing. But I have, I think, more questions with him compared to the first three guys we talked about and how is it will translate to the NFL. He might be one of those guys that's a little better in college than we think it's going to be in the NFL.
Yeah, so he held up well against Keith Randolph, who is a defensive edge, kind of more interior guy against Illinois. Like you said, just like you said, the guy that lines up inside, he held up pretty well against him.
Exactly.
Keith Randolph is a strong man, and so that was, I was like, oh, it was good.
Yeah,
there were a fair amount of double teams in that game, too, so I was like, they gave him help. The Ohio State game, which PFF ranked as his worst game, unfortunately, for him, got a little lungy, lost some balance. I was looking at, there's a 4th-and-4 late in the game, just overpowered by JT Tuimoloau, the same guy I was talking about earlier.
You see some of that stuff, right?
And then as the game went on, it was like they were in passing situations.
That was a great game to watch because they were down and they had a throw.
And he started to fall apart at the end of that game. And so that gives you pause.
It gave me pause, definitely, you know. And again, to me it's different than I saw Latham have bad plays and Mims have a few bad plays too. But it wasn't because of power or ability. It was like, wait, you're too aggressive setting up like that. Or why are you trying to kill this linebacker that hard? You missed him. Like, you didn't need
like
to do
that.
Like
some sort of missed assignment sometimes.
Exactly.
Too.
Just
confusion.
A bad step. But right. Here's the ones where I go, wait. No. This is, I question the ability, the strength. All that. It's not, oh, he took a wrong step or he messed up or took a bad angle. It's like, no. It was all perfect that way, and then came the clash, and I didn't like what I saw there. So that's where, you know, again, really good player. No doubt we're going in the first round. I mean, of course, by all due accounts, from what anybody you talk to or hear, it sounds like he's going 10 through 20 for sure, right? But as you hear me say, I think it should be more like 18 through 32. That's kind of how I feel
about
it.
The funny thing is I was watching the Michigan game, too. It almost looked like, and he was anointed like the guy. And he ended up, he was the best Big Ten offensive lineman.
Sure.
The Michigan game, it almost looked like he came out with like a bigger mentality and like a different demeanor. It was just like he had heard the rumblings like he was having a down year. And I thought he looked pretty good in the Michigan game.
A little more urgency in the game. Aggressiveness. To me, is one of the things I wrote at the end. I would wish he would play with a little more urgency altogether and firing off the ball and being aggressive and dominating people that way.
You started to see it maybe late, but too little too late. Pillsbury poll says, why is Olu Fashanu mid? Uh-oh. And also, why are his hands so tiny? So this is a crazy thing. So I was looking at this, too. And
what's
got
mid
the
mean?
Octagon. I think it's what the kids say now. It's just like average, like midpoint. It's like the kids don't want to say average
that's
anymore.
That's a new one to me. I didn't know that. Okay, that's cool. Mid. That's cool. All right.
I don't think we can. No, I don't think we can do that. I don't think we can use that. I think it's like almost now passed into
It's not even cool anymore?
We missed the wave. And even if we shouldn't have jumped on that wave, probably we're too old
we're too old. 40s.
So we can go back to the octagon there because this is crazy. He's got pretty good. You know, it's like the athletic stuff, 40-yard dash, height, weight, average, mid, as the kids would say. Wingspan a little over mid. But hand size, and I've never seen this before, the zero percentile. So it's 8 inches, 8.5 inches.
It's rare.
So no recent offensive tackle has had hands smaller than 9 inches. We looked back, and Pete, you and I did the same thing here. Isaiah Wynn, you got to go back, drafted as a guard, played tackle though in the NFL, also had 8.5 inch hands.
Yeah.
But that's the only other player.
And it didn't work out that well for Isaiah Wynn either, honestly.
Not bad, but still usable and playable. Right. But like 8.5, like a quarterback would not be drafted with. And this is a man.
It's rare. It would bother me. I'm just going to tell you straight up.
He's 6'6.
Right.
312.
Right. With long arms. Right. It doesn't really make sense. And it would bother me. There's no doubt it would. You know, again,
just like as you shake his hand, like this just bothers me. Even as a player.
Well, we talk
like,
about
happening?
Hands and all that, and it's like one of the, you know, least talked about attributes by a lot of great players, right? You know, whether it's John Randall, a D tackle, or offensive lineman, right? Their ability, and again, I'm going to move the mic here just to like get next to you.
Yeah.
But the ability to do this and control you and move you and do that is a real thing.
What's are you in the 10?
I'm in the tens. Yeah. I was 10 and a quarter, 10 and a half, something there in that range, right? But yeah, that to me, you know, again, not a deal breaker where I'm like, oh man, we can't. I was going to draft him, and now his hands are like, but I don't love that. And like I talked about, out of all the O linemen we've talked about so far, I think he's my least favorite body too. It's not that it's a bad body, right? But it's not my favorite. I like the other ones a little bit more.
Maybe you were right. Maybe you did have Tyler Guyton as 4 and Olu Fashanu 5.
I like Guyton a lot. Guyton's got just even a little bit more rawness than Olu, right? That to me, Guyton is a little all over the place, but I like his high-end ability better than Fashanu.
Let me give you the intro then, the proper intro here. We already know it, but in case you just skipped to the podcast right now, it's a mystery to you. Your number 5 tackle in this class, staying in the tier of promise but needs polish, is
Tyler Guyton, Oklahoma. Yes, we got it right this time. Now, you know, again, like I said, this is one where it was close, and this is one where, you know, like we talked about with Alton Latham, where I was like, I went back and read my notes, you know, one more time this morning, and I was just like, my notes read that, you know, I like Fashanu better right now, right? Guyton, I like the potential of him better, but, you know, he needs some work, and that's, I think, you know, the biggest thing. He's all pass protection, Guyton. Again, another one that I sit there and go, really love the pass pro in a lot of ways. But he needs work as far as, again, the technique and all that. He is way too crazy high at times, right? Mm-hmm. And like you talked about a little bit with Fashanu, Guyton has some games and some where I just go, we got to level up the intensity a little bit. I got to see a little bit more nasty. I got to see a little bit more urgency and firing off the ball and protecting and do all that, right? That, I think, is where I ended up putting Fashanu just a little bit above him, right? But when you talk about, like, pass pro, it needs a little tech work, but still, it's damn good. And yeah, he nobody bull rushes him. That's the thing I liked about him as well. Feet are a little bit all over the place, right? And he's got a really good punch to stop the charge, And again, it's another guy with pretty damn long arms here that just got the protocol look altogether. The ability to mirror defenders with the feet is all really good.
Yeah.
Now, it just, again, bucket step, being in the right positions, all that, that needs definitely some tweaking and some help there. But love the player. No doubt first rounder. No doubt starting tackle in the NFL. Really year one in the NFL. And all these guys are that.
6'8", 322, 22 years old. Played football and basketball back in high school. Actually has some experience as a defensive lineman and an H-back before moving to offensive tackle. So, yep. Yeah, those feet and that movement ability. I watched him against Austin Booker from Kansas.
Yeah.
You liked Austin Booker.
Right.
8 snaps right there. Mostly screens and quick passes. So didn't get to see a whole lot. But Booker never really got super close. And then I watched him against Texas. Whole game against Texas.
Right.
As you take a look at him, his pro day here and moving. Good
yeah,
power.
I like his body is a lot like Joe Alt. I even like his body better than Joe Alt. You could see there the athletic ability is real.
Your teammates there, so those are other, you know, Oklahoma players. Do you have to like give up a lot? You're just like, oh my gosh, I can't hold you. Like, do you have to make it look even better?
I don't think they need to act too much.
They don't need to, but they probably should. So here's the measurables for him. We got an octagon for Guyton. You see the vertical jump. So he's got that. We'll see now. The vertical jump was in the 97th percentile. So if he is a star, maybe it is all
vertical. Right.
Versus Texas in the pass protection. The same thing, like you said, like mirrors well, can drop an anchor. Texas like really did not have anyone that made him sweat.
No,
like
sweat
the only
at all.
Times he got beat was, you know, the fake speed rush outside, counter
somebody
inside.
Comes inside, and that's the technique stuff we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's where I talk about bucket step, right? Because now he's getting so, it's becoming one-on-one basketball, and it's like, wait, you're 6'8", 322, you're not that good at one-on-one basketball, right?
Yeah.
You need to stay in that bucket step. Because now, okay, wait, he's going around the edge. You know it. He's committed. Okay, I can open up. But when you're in that bucket step somewhat square to the line of scrimmage, these are things I've learned through the years a little, right? Now, okay, wait, you're starting to throw it outside. But when you come inside, now I'm in the position. I'm okay. My legs are underneath me, right? And I can use my power to stop you, anchor you, and stop that move. You're right. That was his issue at a lot of the places.
Yes.
He's all that. That's where I came away, right? I went through about 6 or 7 lines here of going technique, body, pad level, keep your feet going on contact, right? I wish he dominated just a little bit more. He never gets dominated, like we talk about, which is important, right?
Yeah.
You know, lets people off block sometimes too easily. That's where I couldn't put him in front of Fashanu, right? But again, I think there's some high-end stuff where I look at it and go, ugh, I kind of like him. The thought of what he could be more than Fashanu, but I just can't. This one was a little too much down to where I couldn't do the Latham put him over Alt thing. I said, okay, wait, no, he's definitely number 5 and Fashanu's number 4.
Primarily played right tackle, did have 70 snaps over at left tackle, so some versatility for your number 5 tackle in Tyler Guyton.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this!
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury.
I'm gonna shine my way.
First Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
Before we get into your interior lineman, we have breaking news.
Whoa.
You don't know
is
this.
Is it good news?
It's interesting news.
Is it interesting news? Damn, you got a real smile on your face. What team is it? Let me hear the team. Can I hear the team? Am I going to know if I know?
It's a trade.
Whoa, they're trading Stephon Diggs.
Stephon Diggs is going to the Houston Texans for undisclosed draft pick.
I was going to say the Houston Texans today when Florio. Oh, because he asked me two teams that just popped to your head right now, and I said the Chiefs and the Cowboys. I swear. Wait, I was going to say.
But not the Texans.
No, I was going to say Houston. We
oh,
didn't
you
get
said
into
the Chiefs
it.
And Cowboys.
Because I was going, wait, the Texans don't have a number one. I know Nick Caserio likes Stephon Diggs, liked him coming out, still likes him. So, and they need that need for that guy. So that is not crazy to me, right? It's not. I'm so pissed I didn't say it today.
So the Bills get a second round pick via Minnesota next year. The Texans get Diggs, a sixth round pick this year, a fifth round pick next year. Wow.
Wow. So they just get a second round pick from Minnesota next year?
Yeah, it must be something that they had.
Hold on, I'm trying to figure this out. What did Minnesota and the Texans trade to end up having that second round pick? I can't think of anything last year. I'm forgetting what the hell that could be. But
well, Minnesota could be bad. So.
Wow.
So Pete's doing the research. Not that it matters. We're getting caught in the weeds here. It doesn't even really
doesn't
matter that much.
But either way,
Stephon Diggs.
Huge
so Stephon
news.
Diggs.
I think it makes a lot of sense. Again, they're going to – he's a route runner. That offense will know how to use him, right? That makes sense. They don't have a clear number one go-to guy. He does that. I think he's going to be happy there in Houston with that quarterback. Obviously, Buffalo had enough. I said today with the tweets, I just go, man, I wish – Stephon Diggs wouldn't do this, right? I don't think it helps him out with other teams. Maybe he did it knowing that this was coming down the pipes, knowing, like, it doesn't matter. I'm already leaving. My team, I'm going somewhere else. So he goes from Josh Allen to C.J. Stroud.
I mean, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. If you're going to trade in for Josh Allen, okay, C.J. Stroud would be one of the few guys you'd go, oh, okay, I can get
like
that.
You were all set to be mad at him. Like, how would you leave Josh Allen? He goes to one of your other man crushes here. Like, what? Why didn't it – is it just his personality? Like, does he have, like, an expiration date?
I don't – yeah, I mean, it just – I don't know what really – goes on there. I mean, it's been going on since, you know, for 2 years, really, these little riffs and tiffs and all of that. And, you know, again, I think that sometimes he hurts himself by making it a little too public or involving himself in social media conversations. You know, and I think, hey, maybe there's been some times where, yeah, they should have focused on giving the ball a little bit more. I think we can, you know, look at the blame both ways. But one thing we know now is they need another receiver. So they got an extra second-round pick. They're picking at the end of the first round, right? Is Buffalo going to be that team that makes a move when we get into, like, ooh, it's 16 or 17, and we're going to see Buffalo trade up to get a receiver or something like that? That's the first thing that pops to my brain.
Yeah.
I know they got Khalil Shakir. I like him a lot. Right? You know, they got Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox at tight end. That's damn good. They got Curtis Samuel this year in free agency. Mac Hollins, too. I like both of those guys. They got some speed and playmaking ability there. Mm-hmm. But they're not number one go-to guys.
Or number two. Are they number twos?
No, not at this point. They're not.
No.
You're exactly right. They're not. They're actually, like, yeah, really high-end threes, probably. You're hoping Curtis Samuel can maybe show – he's shown – he's shown he can be a two, but he hasn't really done it on a consistent, like, season-per-season basis.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would think they're going to add somebody to the mix here at some point.
That second-round pick.
I am so mad I did not say Houston today.
Dealt for
Diggs. Damn it.
It was part of the trade earlier this offseason when the Vikings traded up for a second first-round pick.
Oh, that's what it was from.
So that's what
that's
it was.
That's exactly right. Okay. Yeah, they traded up for that second first-round pick.
So the Bills don't have a first-round pick then this year.
Yeah, they do. Why wouldn't they? They're drafting at the end of the first round, aren't they? They're drafting at like 27, right? I'm pretty sure. What are you?
Okay. Yeah.
Why did you make it? What made you say that?
Well, no, but they traded. So, 28. Okay. All right.
You good?
Okay. I get it now.
You got it
okay.
now?
It's too confusing. I need to see it all written out. We need a whole separate video. The Texans don't have a first round pick. That's right. Okay.
So Minnesota,
there's too many teams involved here.
Minnesota
that's confusing me.
Traded to 23. Right? You know, which was really Cleveland's pick. through the trade for Deshaun Watson. You got it?
It's very confusing to me now. We'll go over it when we get done with the pod. If we have time before you have to interview Bo Nix, which is coming up in seven minutes.
We only have 27 players.
That's crazy. We got. You'll react to that all day tomorrow.
Wow.
On PFT.
Wow.
So we go now. We shake that off, and we go now to your interior offensive linemen. So we've grouped the guards and the centers together, which is good. We didn't even know if we do top five for this.
It kind of happened organically.
There's enough dudes.
There definitely is enough dudes, and there's some guys, again, that, you know, hey, we're going to talk about here where they played tackle in college, but they're made to be NFL guards. That's what they are, right? They could play some tackle if you need be, but I don't think it's the position that they're going to be most ideal at.
All right, so here we go. Your tier one is athletic bulldozer, and you just have one player in your tier one. So this one stands a little bit above the rest. Your number one interior offensive lineman for 2024 is
Talisa Fuanga. Think I got it right?
Yeah, I think you did.
Fuanga, right?
Fuanga.
Okay, all right.
Oregon State.
All right. Fuanga is awesome to watch. Fuanga is, without question, the best run-blocking offensive lineman in this draft. Like, there's no doubt about it. And again, I think he could play tackle. He can do that. But I don't think he's ideal length for tackle. Hey, 6'6", he's 324, he's an incredible athlete. Like, I'm sure you saw Mr. Notes and Film Watcher
Novice
over here.
Film Watcher.
33 1/8 arm, right? That's not exactly ideal. Most NFL teams would like 34 above when you're talking about franchise tackles, right, when you get into that conversation, right? He's a little bit more, has a guard look, right? It's not the most impressive legs and all of that. He moves really well, and he shows power, but he's a little bit more center of gravity, got a belly, and has that kind of look to him.
Here he is.
Right? Maybe as compared to the other guys we've talked about that were just huge, hulking human beings that way. Mm-hmm. But it's this stuff. It's the he's the first guy off the ball every snap. I mean, moves people is an understatement, really. I mean, it's a highlight film at times of watching him just absolutely destroy people on contact. That's where he's really good, right? And it's not like he hits you with his hands and tries to catch you and then push you and do all that. He delivers blows with his face and, you know, his shoulders and moves people that way. Second level blocking, insane, right? Ability to move in space, cut people off, screen game, whatever. I mean, it's elite. His run blocking is elite. His athletic ability for his size is elite, right? He does all that stuff. He's great in space. Versus the pass, he's damn good too. You know, like I said, he can play tackle. He's got the feet to do that. Right? He's got actually pretty damn good technique to do it as well. But it's the, is he long enough, right? You know, the anchor, all of that stuff are the things I wouldn't be sure about. But either way, I look at him and go, like we talked about with Quentin Nelson earlier, you put this guy in, he's your starting guard, and I think he can be Pro Bowl caliber-ish right away.
He turns 22 in 2 days, so happy birthday, Fuanga. He was a backup at Oregon State in 2020, 2021, and then the last couple years, the full-time starter, and then was a first-team All-American this past year. I knew you'd like him because, like, his mentality jumps
out.
This
is what I like. Right?
You watch him against Washington State, and he would attack those linebackers, and he would pancake them, and then he would go for the double kill. And it was like he wasn't satisfied with the pancake. He wanted the double pancake.
Definitely.
He drives dudes. Once he gets you going backwards, it's just like multiple yards downfield. He has that mentality.
He's got that nastiness. It's a guard mentality, right? Yeah. I thought really him and Latham enjoyed dominating people more than anybody else. Kind of letting you know about it after, right? Mm-hmm. Like, kind of like standing over you and being like, yeah, you know, you had you like that right there, right? That's where it's phenomenal. And, you know, I side to side movement, of all the great things he's athletic with, he's fast, you know, he reacts well. I did not think, like, his side-to-side shuffle was as good as maybe some of the other tackles, too. I think that's where I left him off as compared to tackle, where I was kind of like, okay, hey, I know he can play tackle. He can do it. But I just kept looking at him going, wait, he could be the best guard in football. And that's where I think he, you know, will end up being. It's Joel Bentonio, Jonah Jackson from your Lions type of guy, in my opinion, when I looked at him and the body type of the player.
They asked him to do a lot in space.
Yes, they
did. With that. It's just
right.
like he was out there, and so he can miss in those situations, as I think all would. But I think to your point, it did look like when he was beaten, he had a hard time recovering, right? It was just like that was in the pass protection especially.
That's where the top heavy and not having the legs we like, because you get it leaning and it's like, hey, wait, you know, I'm a little more, my weight's in the center of my body, and oh no, now it takes me a second to kind of redirect that way. Mm-hmm. But pulling guard, right, like you said, wide receiver screen, I just got to take a step and take the right angle and go to that DB and cut him off or crush him, whatever. You know, it's incredible. He's man crush territory for Chris Sims. You know,
man,
I love these
guys. Man crush guard number one. So that closes the book on tier one already. Tier two. You've got how many in this one? You've got two players in tier two, and this is versatile staples. So you got staples of your team, versatile players. You don't quite like them in tier one, but they're tier two for you. Your number two inside lineman is
Troy Fautanu from Washington. Yeah, maybe, arguably, the best overall athlete of all the linemen in the draft. That is how I would look at it. He is a phenomenal athlete in every area, right? There's not a lot of bad to his game, okay? Pass protection, footwork, all of that is incredible, right? Got pretty long arms. He does, right? Now, I don't know if he's got ideal overall tackle length. I don't know if I really feel comfortable in that department. Nor am I going to say, again, do I know if I think his anchor is quite in the same, you know, stratosphere as some of the top tackles we talked about, right? I mean, again, Latham, Mims, right? You saw guys run at them at full speed and sometimes go, damn, I mean, they didn't move an inch. Like, they literally were just like, no, this stops here. You shall not pass, right?
He almost seems to cede ground and uses athletic ability to kind of get in the way.
Exactly right. That's exactly right, right? You know, he's got some nastiness in pass pro, right? He'll come off a guy and knock him and do that. And, you know, he enjoys dominating in pass pro. I thought the run game stuff was underwhelming. To me, in the run game, I just do my assignment blocker, right? And that's where I would like to see a little more aggression in that department, because he shows killer aggression pass blocking, run game, you know, and I don't know if you agree with here, but you don't ever see him really dominate people or root people out. You don't see him get beat, right? His guy doesn't make the tackle, but he does it a little more like we talk about. He's really good technique, gets his great athletic ability, and he just cuts the guy off. And you go, okay, he didn't make the tackle, but he didn't dominate him either, right? Mm-hmm. There's not that. I think that's the big thing with him. But a lot along the lines to me of like a lesser physical Elijah Vera Tucker for the Jets. That's what I looked at. Could play guard or play tackle. He's pretty safe pick because of that. Right. And I think that's where a lot of teams will see that value and go, well, you know, we'd like him a tackle, but if it doesn't work, he can definitely do guard. Really like the player. Incredible athlete.
Yep. PFF says his flexibility, agility and coordination could allow him to see meaningful reps at all five offensive line spots. You see him more at guard. But I think it was, yeah, the quickness is like his elite trait.
It's incredible.
Right? Like if he's beaten slightly,
he can recover. He definitely can.
But he's not that sticky necessarily. It's just like guys can spin off him a little bit.
He's definitely can't manhandle you that way with like the other guys could with their punches or their hand locking you in there, right? That's the big thing. And that to me is what led me to go, I think this guy is more of that, right? He can lean when he punches too, where he falls off of guys, right? Instead of where like, hey, Mims and Latham and all, they're like up straight and they just boom, right? They just throw those hands out there and the guys like do that. He kind of goes and like his whole body goes. And then guys see it coming and they sidestep it or get off him that way, right? Still really good. But yeah, thought he was a guard. Incredible athlete. Would like to see a little bit more physicality at the point of attack in the run game. But damn, he's a can't miss prospect. And really, I think one of the safer picks of the draft and an all O lineman for that
matter. Slam dunk first rounder. Again, 10 for you.
Yeah,
you
slam dunk, slam dunk.
So as is your number three, I'm sure, interior offensive lineman, as we're motoring through here. 6'5", 313, 21 years old, was just a three-star recruit out of high school, and now he's on Chris Sims' top five list. Number three for you is?
Graham Barton, Duke. Played left tackle at Duke. No way he'll be a left tackle in the NFL. He's Joe Tooney to me. That's who I look at, right? That to me is who he looks like in his uniform. He plays like him, right? I mean, again, Graham Barton, again, is another guy that I'd go, he's a really safe pick. I think some of these safe picks might get a little overvalued because teams are just going to go, wait, he can play tackle, right? So he's got that. That saves us a little bit. But I think he's best at guard. Maybe he could play center. Right, so he's another one where you just said that about the PFF that said that about Fuaga.
Yeah,
same kind of thing where I go, he could probably play all five offensive line positions, but I think best is guard. Again, the length, the ability to anchor, do that type of stuff. I don't think he's made to do that against elite NFL rushers. That's not where he is. Mm-hmm. But you know, as far as consistency. He's the Joe Alt of guards, let's just say. Consistency, gets the job done, right? He's a twitchy athlete with very good feet, right? Can do all the things that we heard Joe Alt talk about with Connor. You know, it's great cutoff block, reach blocks, all those things athletically are really damn good, all right? You know, he delivers the blow like a guard, right? You know, to me, it's not like, oh, I hit my hands on him or I just shield him off with my body. He brings it in that department.
Yep.
Yeah, I think he's a really safe pick. And again, a guy that I look at that go, you know, I don't think he's going in the top 20 picks, but 20 to 32, I definitely think we're going to see Graham Barton go off the board in that area.
Lance Zierlein over at NFL.com said, though he played at a high level at left tackle, center will likely be his NFL home. So center or guard perhaps for him. Yeah, Clemson game with him was fun to watch. He was moving bodies. Yeah. Seeking linebackers on some pulls. Seemed like a natural in that position. But I watched him. He had 9 snaps, pass rush snaps, pass protection against Jared Verse.
Yeah.
Against Florida State.
Right.
And Verse got him.
Yes.
I mean, that was not that
was the one
difficult of a matchup. But for Verse, like, he's elite, right? He's one of the top edge rushers in the draft this year. But then he also matched up against Braden Fisk. Inside, look better against
that,
him.
That's more
know,
his,
some of the power.
That's more of his cup of tea right there, right? Being in space, we're talking about tackles in the NFL. I know there's a Teron Armstead, right, who's maybe not the guy we're talking about, but in general, again, the really good ones have become giant human beings because mm-hmm. of the versatility and the craziness and the freaks of nature we're seeing them come off the edge that are an all-time high in the NFL, an all-time. Right? Chris Jones in some snaps is going to be out there. And you're going, do you think Graham Barton's really going to be able to block Chris Jones when he has a speed to power move? Right? Yeah. Right? No, he's not. He's better if Chris Jones is right in front of him, doesn't get a little momentum. He can get on him, use his technique, move him that way. Right? That's where I think he is. He is. I think I kind of hit it. I wish there were some plays where I go, I wish he'd play with a little bit lower pads. I feel like he can hit people a little high at times. But plays to the whistle every play, plays hard, right? He's got some nasty in him like we like and all of that. But, yeah, I think we're talking about a guard all the way here. It's just like we talked, the length, the anchor, all of that. It's not made for tackle.
Yeah, on NFL.com, an NFC national scout said, so much fun to watch a lineman with that kind of consistency and effort on every play. He's the same player in every game. I think that's a good summation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, that, you know, again, that's where, I, you know, Joe Alt, this guy, I can see, you know, conservative offensive line coaches going, I just want one that I know is going to be good and I can make it work, right? I don't want the guy that's I know can be awesome, but I'm not sure about it, right? So there's going to be a group of guys in the NFL that are going to look at him and go, yeah, he's safe. I like it. Let's do it.
May play guard, may play center at
yeah,
the next level.
Either
this
way,
next
you're
guy,
safe.
As we go into tier three, another promising but needs polish category, this guy played center. In college, he's 6'3". He's 328 pounds. He turned 21 years old in January, so he's another youngin. Your number four interior offensive lineman is?
Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon, right? Bo Nix's center.
Mm-hmm.
The guy he put his hands on his butt a whole lot, certainly. Maybe more
Ask
than
him
he'd
about
like.
That. Ask him about
I
that.
Will. I will. I'll be like, you know, what kind of butt did Powers Johnson have? Tell me, you know, let me
we
know
need
there.
It to scout it.
Pure center, right? like him a lot. Like the body. When I think about a center, I do think of them a little differently, right? It's not about length all the way and some of that type of stuff, right? It's about twitchiness. They got to snap a ball and block somebody. So you better be really twitchy and explosive that way to get that done, right? Also, you know, stoutness a little bit, power of the body. That's what I like about Powers Johnson. Powers Johnson is made to be a top-notch pass-protecting center. That's where I really like it. Now, where I say he needed the polish and all that is I think he needs, like, the run game could use a little work, right? Right? But I still think I saw enough there that I went, you know, I think he can be good at this. It's just Oregon didn't run a ton. That wasn't what they were all about. Their runs were, let's throw another screen pass, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
But when I looked at him from the pass protection part of that, I just went, damn, he's got a similar body to Creed Humphrey, who we saw in Kansas City, right? I have no doubt that he moves his feet well. And he can get off the ball to where, yeah, he's going to be a handful for defensive tackles to think they're just going to run by this guy.
Here he is. His weight is in the 98th percentile, height in the 51st percentile. Here is a look at the man. He's a big human being. So I think his teammates are giving him a little give. Not that he's not powerful, but I think you got to do that, right?
Yeah, you could see, look, there's a little tightness on him a little bit.
Oh, I see.
Right? You know what I mean there? You know, but again, the pure power and strength are there. It's sometimes a little pad level or change direction. He kind of has like the Fred Flintstone run where he's got these short little strides and all of that.
Maybe it's good, you know,
right?
Short, choppy steps.
But he can help him, be under control and block in space that way. I want to see him be a little bit more of a road grader. That was my biggest thing. It's the run game stuff that I really wanted to see improve or be taken to the next level. But, you know, the big thing is no one in the NFL is going to be a mismatch for him or an issue. Like, I don't look at it and go, oh, man, when he plays these type of D tackles, he's going to be in trouble. Or if he plays this type of D tackle, right? You know, I was perfectly happy with going, wait, the power guys, he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
The quicker, faster D tackles, he's got enough speed and side-to-side shuffle and foot quickness that way to where I would feel comfortable about that as well.
I mean, it's really hard when you look at his tape to find anything really bad.
No.
Right? Because it's like he allowed one pressure all year, according to PFF, and I looked it up. It was against NC State, and it was a play where Bo Nix pump faked and then held onto the ball, and then eventually the pressure got there. So I was like, all right, it's not totally on him. Now, he did play in an offense where they did throw the ball quickly most of the time, which has been part of the knock on Bo Nix as well. And even, like, PFF separates out his negatively graded run plays, too. And most of those, he still found a way to do something good.
He gets it done.
Right? It was like he might have missed there, but he, like, moved on to somewhere. It's like he's still able to do something good even on his worst plays.
I think that's the truth of it. It's just about wanting more, going, wait, you're capable of more, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, again, if he gets in an offense and gets coached a little bit and he stays a little lower with the pads and all that, that to me was the big thing. You know, moving people in front of him in the run game, he would be better if he just played lower, right? He can get better there. That to me is the big thing. But, you know, pulling all of that, I liked all of that type of stuff. Yep. I really
getting
did.
Getting to the next level on
and,
that.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see. You know, it's a will he end up in the first round? I don't know. This to me is where we get to the fringe guys, where we're here at 4 and 5 in the interior O-lineman, where I'd go, I wrote like 25 to 35, right? And maybe he goes late first round, depending how it all shakes out. But, you know, could I see it going, early second round, something like that? Yeah, I certainly could see that there. But I think he's kind of in that range.
Jake Scanlon says it appears it would be no shocker if the Steelers went center at pick number 20.
It wouldn't be crazy. I mean, we know. I think O-line is on their radar. They're spoiled by having a awesome O lineman and Pouncey be there. I mean, center forever, right? You know, but yeah, I mean, the Steelers are one you definitely look at in the draft and you start to go through your head about, ooh, who could this team take? O line would certainly be an area you'd look at the Steelers would address.
They will have options, as it appears here, as we are about to talk about our 10th offensive lineman and final in this podcast. your number five interior offensive lineman in the draft class of 2024 is 6'5", 311 pounds. He's 22 years old. As you get to the proper page,
thank
his
you.
Name is...
Jordan Morgan, Arizona. Man, I love Jordan Morgan a lot. Here's a guy that played tackle that there's no chance he can play tackle in the NFL. Right. It's just, again, like we talked about, not long enough arms, not a big enough human being. The technique needs a lot of work. You combine all that, you go, no, wait, not that. But, man, when you talk about athletic ability, right, that's where I go, ooh, I like this kid a lot. He got a lot like he's got a body and a playing style that's similar to the guy we talked about in early at the start of the draft, Matthew Bergeron, right, who went in the second round of the Falcons, a guard.
Yeah.
Right? It's that kind of body. Now, I'm not going to say he's quite as physically mean and the killer that Bergeron was. That's what I loved about Bergeron, if you remember last year. I mean, it was like, no regard for my body. I'm just going to kill everybody all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not that. But when you talk about the athletic ability and what's necessary to play the guard position and, of course, strength and be able to move the people, yeah, that's all there. That is all there. You could see the athletic ability, the get off in the run game, right? He can fire and hit people and get on them before they're ready to go, right? Easily makes reach blocks and cut off blocks on D linemen. The second level stuff is it's phenomenal. Him getting the second level linebacker safeties, whatever, blocking in space. I mean, incredible. Moves well side to side. Like the athletic ability is there. He can mirror and do all that, right? It's just that when it becomes to the power stuff, and then you talk about, ooh, I don't think he's a big enough man, let alone he needs some technique help, definitely, right? I mean, he's a few times doing, I feel like, the karaoke drills. He's going back there. And I'm like, whoa, okay, hold on. Yeah. We need some work there, right? But that's the biggest thing. But, like, it's where you look at him here and you go, the athleticism, the get-off in the run game, bendable and pliable, right, to be in those wrestling matches and still win them in awkward positions, right? Good power on contact, moves people with the initial blow, right? Loose hips, bendable like I talked about, keeps legs going on contact, right? You know, I wish he was a hair more nasty like Bergeron, I wrote, right, that. But the bottom line is the guy is a guard all the way who needs some technique work. Not big enough, long enough man to play tackle in the NFL. Arms aren't long enough either. Yeah. But, you know, he can be a high-level guard for a lot of years. And like I said, it reminds me of Bergeron, just a less physical version of him. But every bit the athlete he was, I kind of put him – I wrote 33 to 50, right?
Fringe-ish.
So I didn't put him in the first round. I put him right at the start of the second.
Yeah, below average height, weight, wingspan, arm was in the 9th percentile.
Yes.
So you don't like
no
that.
No way for tackle.
Hand size in the 95th percentile, though, so you like that.
So that interior wrestling, that's probably – hey, listen, that's why you look at things and you go, ooh, when he gets in these weird, awkward positions, he can win sometimes. Hand strength is certainly a part of that.
And I will say, though, I did watch him against Braylon Trice from Washington.
Yeah, right.
And against Leatu Latu, who
right.
you liked a lot from UCLA. He had 20 pass-protecting snaps against Braylon Trice. He held his own pretty well.
He didn't
do too bad. He wasn't outmatched.
No.
And Latu didn't have a whole lot of opportunities, some quick plays, but held up well there. There was one play where he just kind of faked him out and then didn't even get a finger on Latu.
Yeah.
And Latu got an
I think the more if that was a real
pressure.
NFL game, Latu would have dominated him as the game went on. I think if he had to really pass protect that way.
Yeah.
A guy like Trice, on the other hand, right, a little less of an athlete, so he doesn't have to go,
for sure,
I have to get out here and like work as hard. Like we talk about in the DB, right, who runs 4.2, he can go 90% and run 4.35 and still go, wait, I'm under control. I can cut at a whim here and on a dime, right? Same thing with tackles sometimes. Wait, he doesn't scare me upfield as much, so I can get my feet and my weight underneath me. And now Trice, who likes to overpower people with speed to power, he's not going to do that as well because this guy was like, wait, no, I'm plenty fast enough to block you. I'm bracing for the power move, right?
Yeah.
And that's where, I think he had a little bit of the advantage as far as that matchup was concerned.
That was the one time he got a pressure was when Trice just basically threw his whole body weight into him and did knock him back enough to move around him. But held up okay. But your number five interior
what
offensive lineman in the books. And so there you go. There we have it. So we've got two. We got a lot of work here. We had a trade alert here.
Holy crapola,
got that
Batman.
In there. We got to get wrap our minds around that. So let's take a look. Morgan has been in the lab breaking these players into the tiers. Here is your interior lineman prospects. One man, Fuanga, stands above the rest.
He does. I'm excited for him. You know, again, it's I think top 15 talent, which you don't say about guards, you know, all that often, right? I mean, it's been Quentin Nelson, Skoronski, right? I mean, there are not a lot of guards we've talked about being in the top 15 in the draft ever. I don't know if it goes top 6 like Quentin Nelson or top 10, but again, I wouldn't be mad if a team, you know, at 10 or 9 or whatever took this guy. He's worthy of that. Damn good player, starts and makes your O-line, you know, noticeably better on the inside right away.
And you had 2 in Tier 1 for your tackles. Joe Alt, number 2, to, as some people call him, J.C. Latham or Latham. You're number 1. You both of those guys would instantly help an offensive line in the NFL day 1.
Yeah, day 1. Ready to go. Alt, of course, is more schooled than everything we talked about, but I think Latham is the kind of guy, like, at the end of year 1, we're going, Latham's awesome. Just like we thought, Latham is the man. He's looking like he could be the best tackle in football. All right, I think he has that type of ability.
And my man crush in Amarius Mims.
I love it.
In Tier 2.
I love when you have a man crush. That's awesome.
It's fun to watch. All right, that was well done.
Thank you.
We got you done in plenty of time to prepare for your Bo Nix interview.
Oh, yeah, baby. We got a Bo Nix interview coming. You'll see that released probably later in the week, early next week. Going to dissect, have some fun. Quarterback school, going to get, you know, in the weeds about certain quarterback nuances. I'm excited to talk about him. I really am. I think he's another guy where I felt like 3 weeks ago, Michael Penix Jr. was not getting the credit he deserves. And all of a sudden, I feel like here as of late, everyone's like, yeah, I think Michael Penix Jr. is a top 20 pick, which I want to be like, yeah, I mean, guy that throws lasers all over the field. And it feels like this guy's fallen out of favor a little bit in the draft community or whatever. So, it's a damn good player. I'm excited to talk about him. Check us out. You know where to find it. All things Chris Sims Unbuttoned. Ahmed Farid, as always, thank you so much. You are the man, the myth, the legend, but really the man.
Yeah.
Okay, there's not much of a myth about you, actually.
I'm here all the time.
Yeah, so you're here.
Nothing mysterious about me.
Thanks, as always, though, for driving the ship, and thanks for being Johnny Scout.
I'm trying.
I really appreciate it.
I try to at least get eyes on
these
guys.
You need to have a man crush at each position.
I think you're right.
So that's your thing.
You're right.
Going forward. We got D tackles on Monday.
Okay.
Get ready, because it looks a gooder. It looks a gooder. Okay? I'm excited to watch it.
Got some Texas guys there.
Yeah, got some Texas guys. We got some stuff there. We definitely do. We like big butts, and we do not lie. All right? All right, everybody. Be good. Have a great weekend. Enjoy everything out there. Be good. Talk to you Monday. Peace out, homies. Clap it up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.